Welcome to REI Marketing Secrets, the podcast where we dive deep into the world of real estate investor marketing. Your host is Trevor Oldham, founder of Podcasting You, and each week we bring you exclusive interviews with successful real estate investors who have mastered the art of marketing their real estate businesses. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just starting out in the real estate industry, this podcast is your gateway to unlocking the secrets behind effective real estate investor marketing. Get ready to elevate your marketing game and take your business to new heights.
Today on the REI Marketing Secrets podcast, we're chatting with Andrew Kim. Andrew Kim is the CEO and co-founder of Share. Share is the easiest way to build a portfolio of single-family rentals. They are an end-to-end service that acquires and manages high rental properties for their clients, regardless of where you're located. From sourcing, closing, renovating, to managing your properties and tenants, investors reap the benefits of owning high-returning real estate assets without the headaches of being a landlord. This is a super interesting interview today with Andrew. We really dive into the whole aspect of the single-family rental market, what makes them different from multifamily, how they manage their tenants, how they manage and find these properties, how they have the management team, the typical returns you can see, how to finance these deals. We really go through everything you need to know to start your own single family rental portfolio. And without further ado, let's hop into the interview. Hey everyone, welcome back to the REI Marketing Secrets podcast. Today on the show, we have Andrew Kim. Andrew, for our audience out there, who is just learning about yourself for the very first time, do you mind just going into your background a little bit?
Sure. Yeah. So, professionally, I'm an entrepreneur in the technology space, but got into real estate investing back in 2010, was introduced to the Florida market first, and then, was a very, very passive, but not the greatest investor since then. Focused mainly on my tech career, was living out in California, building a technology company. Fast forward 10 plus years when it's like, okay, well, time to, think about retirement and the end game, circling back to real estate, realizing that it's still not the easiest way to, easiest place to deploy capital and find and stabilize rental homes. And then thus spawned Share, my current venture where real estate meets technology. And what we're building is trying to help everyday investors find low risk, low effort real estate investment opportunities.
So I'm curious how you got from California to where you are now in Toronto. Because I know you're talking about how, I'm in New York, I don't really enjoy the cold. You don't really enjoy the cold. Unless you're in Northern California. Just curious, how that transition happened.
Yeah. So, I was born and raised in Toronto, Canada, and then being a tech entrepreneur, I think the natural progression is get to the US. And back in 2011, I moved to California because I was building a technology company, and we took a lot of investment dollars from a lot of venture capital firms out in California. So I moved there, spent about 4 to 5 years out there, built and sold my company. And then little did I know that my visa was dependent upon having that company active. So after I sold it, I unexpectedly and reluctantly came back to Toronto. But I learned about the U.S. real estate market there, and that's kind of stuck with me ever since.
Yeah, that kind of stinks. not having that happen. I know California is it's a pretty sweet spot, especially Southern California. It's a nice area. But I'm just curious, when it comes to like you and your company, why did you guys choose, say the single family rentals over, say, your multifamily? And I feel like multifamily is sort of that hot button where when people come across it, they say, oh, why buy one house when I can buy, 4 units and I can scale quicker? That's always, I find, the conversation where people interject. It's like, oh, I'd rather own, 10 units instead of 10 single family units. So just curious, what drew you to the single family space as compared to, say, the multifamily space?
Yeah. So, a lot of things change. I think, technology has kind of leveled the playing field there in terms of being able to get that diversification and risk mitigation factor. But single family, because we feel that is the most resilient asset class, the most boring, but safest. And I would naturally say, like, as you kind of master that single family rule, then yeah, why not progress to the multi? But I know, like, a multi does, you know, depending again on size and price point, they're a lot more, they're a higher ticket item and typically does require you to kind of go raise capital, become a joint venture, and have to do a lot of things that are probably net new, as opposed to keeping the control within your own wheelhouse. If this is my capital, I can actually afford to go buy a house and it's all mine. I don't have any partners. I don't need a GP. I don't need an LP, et cetera, et cetera. So that's why the single family. And I think, like, the pandemic is really also show the hierarchy of needs of individuals. They would always kind of gravitate towards a single family. And then the tenant profile of a single family is a little more long-term. And then talking about the diversification piece, yes, of course, you know, multifamily, it's like, well, what happens if, you know, you, a person vacates your single family, you're out. But, you know, same thing on the multi, whereas they're like, well, one person leaves, I still got my other doors. Well, now what we're saying is, look, you should be diversifying across multiple geographies. So before technology, it was very difficult. You know, that's a lot of high touch effort. But in the multifamily, you know, we think that, you know, if you have one unit, you got that all in one place. So we don't like the idea of just that, like, buying a single multifamily and having it all concentrated in the same geography, because, you know, forbid anything happens, like you deploy all your capital and next sort of Detroit, Michigan automotive collapse happens and everything is underwater. Whereas we're like, you should be diversifying across regions. But single family has always been very difficult. But now with technology, you know, we're making that sort of a level playing field. So whether you have units in Georgia, Texas, or the Carolinas, we're providing a singular view and single point of contact where it looks like it could potentially be all managed under one asset manager, which is us, despite it being across multiple geographies and multiple property management companies. So giving you that sort of multifamily ease, but scattered single family diversification.
Yeah, I think that what you said there is great. And I'm thinking of, like, the Austin, Texas multifamily market, where I think that's one of the ones that's taken a big dip in that, say, 40%. So if you had, say, one single family home in Austin, then you had maybe one Georgia, Florida, whatever it is within the U.S., at least you're diversifying, where instead of just having one particular big property and just saying specifically that Austin market. So I like that aspect of it. But when it comes to, like, your company, how do you find these properties? So I was taking a look on your site, and being in New York, I saw a couple of properties in Niagara Falls. It's a great spot. I will say I do prefer the Canadian side after being on the both US and Canadian side out there. But just curious, how do you guys find these properties? Do you have, like, a set criteria? Are you just looking at, like, the 1% rule? How do you guys find them?
Yeah. So first, the Niagara Falls properties were a bit of a unique client driven request. It wouldn't necessarily have been our first location. But how we look for properties, well, first we kind of do, it's client led. So the properties you see on our site are just more samples, or what we call buy box adjacent. So every time a client comes through, we do a bit of an intake, a KYC. We understand what their buy box is. And then we will cast our net across, you know, typical landlord friendly states, to look for matches of that buy box. And what's happening behind the scenes is that we're, you know, we've got feeds on almost every single MLS, so all the on-market deals. Plus, we tap into large off-market channels, wholesalers and institutions, and our property management partners that are looking to offload or do any sort of dispositions. And then our system is basically shortlisting those based on, like, cap rates or, you know, certain types of yields. And then we'll shortlist that and present it to the client.
Yeah, it's interesting to be that individual, you know, they're choosing Niagara for just being New York's not too landlord friendly here. I know there's new laws where I forget what it was. It was in the last week, but yeah, they were trying to make it even harder to, like, kick out your tenant, it was something like the tenant will have the option to renew the lease and you can't kick them out. It's crazy what they do in New York. You know, I was worried for it, but hey, if that individual, they want to go in that spot, you know, more power to them. But we're curious on the cost of the single families and how, I guess it's one sort of the cost and then the financing aspect. Let's say one is I know that the properties range in different prices. Like, I saw the one in Niagara, you know, it was cheaper. It was $55,000, I think, the one I saw, and then other properties were or 300K? Is it 20% down? Is there any creative financing involved? What does that sort of look like from a cost and financing perspective for someone?
Yeah. So yeah, our price range points range, you know, the Niagara Falls, again, we don't suggest that for first time investors. So we typically, our sweet spot is anywhere from the 150K to like the mid 300s. And you know, they've got varying returns, you know, on, we would call, like, we classify them the A, B, and C. A's being the higher price point, C's being the lower in the 150K range with the higher returns. A's being a higher appreciating asset. So in all cases, when clients are looking for financing, we typically defer them to DSCR lenders, which we would help them sort of do the backing into the math of how much capital you need up front to ensure that we get the best rates. And then once we have sort of a deal, prospective deal, we have a way to kind of push that deal out to thousands of lenders to see which rates come back. And then some clients will bring their own mortgage as well, where they might go to their primary bank, and their primary bank may have a good investment product.
Yeah, I think that's super helpful. So no, it's crazy, you know, looking at the debt service coverage ratio, some of the properties in the multifamily space, they were, it's crazy what the loans were, you know, a couple of years ago and how it's gone so different. But
yeah, it was free money, right?
Yeah, exactly. But with these properties, is there like, you know, is there like a standard return that someone's looking to get? And let's say, you know, maybe, again, I hate to keep harping on it, but it was the one I saw, the Niagara Falls, maybe that's like you can expect like a 15% return because the property's maybe more in rough shape, more needs more work done to it, where more of your, say, your $300,000 single family home, let's say in Georgia or Ohio, or $300,000 in Ohio, that could be a really nice property. Maybe is that like more like a 6-8% return? Does it depend on like the different markets, what the return someone could expect?
Yeah, 100%. So we use cap rates. I know it's a very multifamily thing, but yeah, we use cap rates. And for the A's, so the higher price point homes, like in the 300s, we would be at the low 4%. And then for the C's that are like in the mid 100s, those would be like in the upwards of like mid 6s.
Are you an alternative investment company looking to expand your reach and share your expertise with a wider audience? Look no further. Podcasting U is here to help you shine in the world of podcasting. At Podcasting U, we specialize in connecting alternative investment companies with top podcasts, providing you with a platform to share your insights, strategies, and success stories with engaged audiences. Don't miss the opportunity to elevate your company's presence in the podcasting sphere. Contact Podcasting U today and let us help you secure valuable podcast appearances that can take your business to the next level. Visit our website to learn more and take the first step towards podcast guesting success. Go to podcastingu.com today.
Yeah, I think that's super helpful to know for our audience. But we're curious, when it comes to, say, like the properties themselves, and you're going out there and finding them and doing all that legwork, is there any additional work you do? And what I mean by that is, like, is there any like turnover of the property? Is there anything like that? Or is it more just you guys are, you know, taking all of the time out of the legwork of finding these deals instead of me going out there and spending all my time where I'm super busy? Is there any of that, you know, where you go in, maybe you rehab it a little bit, you know, touch it up just to make it livable if it is, you know, the different property?
Yeah, 100%. So we're end to end. You know, we'll help you acquire, and then we'll help you place a tenant. And then long-term wise, Share is an asset management company. So, you know, typically working with very busy professionals that understand the value of direct real estate ownership, but can't be bothered with any sort of DIY landlord duties. You know, a lot of them do have institutional investments like REITs and private equity funds. So they know what the upside is, but want to kind of keep it for themselves. So that's what we provide them. So on that note, when we start searching for the home, what we will do is we kind of understand what their renovation risk is. You know, do they want something turnkey, or do they want something with a big rehab? And I will air quote rehab. You know, we only do a certain degree of rehab. We won't do major structural changes. But yeah, we will actually, when we find a home, we actually lock up the home under share, and then we will assign it to the end client. So during that period, during the inspection period, we'll send in a third party inspection, our renovation team and our property management partner to give us a full assessment. We'll calibrate those numbers and then present it to the client. And if we think it's still a good deal, we'll give them the thumbs up. If they want to proceed, then we'll help them close it out. And then usually within 1 week of close, our renovation team is in there doing the work. And then when it's ready to lease out, well, our marketing team will start leasing it out as well. And then when there's a tenant in place, we're the asset management of company of record, where we want to 10x your portfolio while you focus on your personal and professional careers.
Yeah, that sounds like a pretty sweet deal. And I sort of think of it as like, you know, being a passive investor, where there's the active part of it where, you know, for me, where I'm going in and I'm investing in deals with a sponsor, I still got to like vet the deal. I still got to vet the person I'm going to be investing with. I'm assuming someone would come to your company, they still want to check out, you know, see the property, see like, you know, get some estimations and different things like that. But after that, let's say they've gone through the process, they found the property, maybe they did a slight little rehab. And then you mentioned you are the asset manager on it. What's more needed from an individual? Is it, you know, is it really just sort of hands off from there? Is it, hey, if something comes up, we're going to send it your way. Maybe there's a repair that comes up here and there that we just need to get your approval on. What does that sort of look like from a perspective of someone after they've invested with your or after they've invested in one of these properties through your company?
Yeah, so we would think about it as like an enhanced sort of relationship with your property management company. We would be that one person in between, so you'd never actually have to speak to a PM, property manager. So we've got certain decision rights and a reserve pool of capital that we can make certain decisions on their behalf. But we do give the client the option of, hey, when do you want to be notified? If it's anything north of like $3,500 or anything like that, we give them that option. But we try to not have to bother them as much as possible. And in most cases, I'd say like 85%+, we don't ever hear from the client until it's tax season. And they're like, can you please provide us with your year-end schedules, ease and stuff like that? And we're like, yeah, just log into your account, go get it. It's like, I don't have my password. We're like, okay, fine, here, we'll just email it to you. But yeah, they're usually pretty hands-off.
Yeah, that's really nice. Cause I mean, for me, like, I feel like I just don't have the personality to go out and buy a single family home and just manage a tenant. I'd rather have that property manager. I just feel like I'd be like way too lenient and be like way too nice. You know, like, oh, you're falling behind on rent. That's okay. You know, just get, you know, make up on it in the next couple of months, just knowing my personality. So that's why I was like, if I'm going to invest in single family, I'd rather invest with a company like going through your company where you have the built out the team. You have like that extra layer between me and the tenant where I don't have to deal with that individual because I feel like I'm too nice of a person and I feel bad about kicking them out or even like raising rents. So yeah, not have me be the fall guy would be nice. But when it comes to like the tenants themselves, is there like a screening process that you guys put them through? What does that sort of look like?
Yeah, we'll run them through the standard sort of criminal check, like the previous sort of landlord screening, as well as their sort of debt ratio, making sure that they've got enough income to cover X number of months of lost rents.
And with the tenants themselves, and I'm trying to think of the best way to say it, but just like a turnover rate, is there like a certain, I know it's more of a single family rental where I know like multifamily apartments, the turnover is like every 18 months, you know, the number is pretty high just because people are moving all the time, where I feel like when you have a single family house, people are less likely to move because they're not like living somewhere and they have their own personal space. So is there like a certain turnover rate, you know? And what I mean by that is that, let's say someone invests in one of these deals, you know, through your company, and you know they've had a tenant in place for 2 years, and then the tenant decides, hey, I want to leave, and then now there's a few months of vacancy, and obviously, you know, not collecting, you know, mortgage payments at that point. Just curious, like how you handle that situation, or what that looks like, just from, you know, just because I've heard not your company, but terrible turnkey companies in the past where they, you know, where they have done a good job and not saying anything like that, but that's something I have heard where they took like 9 or 12 months to find a new tenant. And, you know, the person, basically all their cash flow is bled out from them that they were going to make in the last couple of years. So just curious how your company handles that when it comes to that sort of that turnover aspect of finding like and replacing the, I guess you could say your tenant, you know, with a little amount of time.
Yeah. So what we do is we typically like on a zip code level, we'll take that into consideration when we're doing your sort of cap rate estimates in terms of vacancy allowance. and like how many years is the average sort of leasing and the average leasing time. So like, you know, in a C-class neighborhood, we might allocate more months of sort of or higher frequency of turnover with a longer lead time to lease. Whereas an A class property, we may have to like chalk that up for every 3 years, 4 years. So yeah, it is very zip code specific and tenant profile specific, as opposed to what we've seen in the past. It's just kind of the static 5% or whatever percent and very naive assumptions.
Yeah, I think that's super helpful to know, you know, just depending and varying based on location. And when you're like managing these properties in these different parts of the country, how does that management team work? Are you just vetting like local property management teams? Are you, you know, do you have your own team built out, boots on the ground? What is that? How does that sort of look like? You know, what could someone expect from your property management side of the business?
Yeah. So first off, like we don't do property management in-house. We outsource to large property management companies that typically don't work with the retail one-off individual investor. They typically only work with large institutions, several thousand doors minimum. They look at us as an institution because everything is on sort of one account. It's a lot easier for them and they get to treat us just like any other institution. And then we pass through that cost savings and that quality to our end client. And it's the only way we could actually scale this business is with large institutional property management companies that do have thousands of doors in that particular area. So that's how we have sort of the buying power we do have with certain local contractors and service providers.
Yeah, I like that. I like that aspect because I know like if I was going out on my own, it would be a lot harder for me to get a really good property management team that has all those systems and processes, or be like the guy down the street that is going to take the money and run. Not to say that that would happen, but
I've heard of that. I've so heard of that. But yeah, I've heard of that nightmare. But yeah, it's better with larger players. Like they've got a strong accounting practice, so we can get very detailed financials and estimates and strong feedback and turnaround times. There's protocols.
Yeah, exactly. You want to have that sort of structure in place, but when it comes to like these markets, and I know you mentioned like your customer buy box, but is there certain areas in the country that you're looking at, say like your, I always think of your conservative states, your red states, at least for me, like that's where I personally like to invest. So you pretty much go from Texas all the way to Florida, go up a little bit north, South Carolina, and go to the Midwest just because they're more tenant friendly. And obviously that one individual, I don't know why they want to invest in New York, but nonetheless, they want to, you know, it's here's me investing in my home, or not my home state, but where I live. But yeah, how does that sort of look from a market standpoint? Do you look where there's more of the cash flowing aspects of it, where maybe they're your second and your tertiary markets? How does that sort of look like?
Yeah, that's exactly it. So, you know, we are Sun Belt, Midwest, and then based on their preference, if they're an appreciation play, then that will probably be more of the sort of prime metros in the Sun Belt. And then if they're looking for more cash flow players, they're the more like tertiary markets and some of the more of the Midwest.
Yeah, that's perfect. I think that's definitely good to know as well. And curious, someone, let's say they come in, they're a W-2 professional and they want to diversify their portfolio. Maybe they have like your background there in tech. They're earning, say, $200,000, $250,000 a year and they want to just diversify their portfolio. How does investing in one, the single family, help them diversify? And then two, are there certain tax benefits that someone could receive by investing in these single family homes?
Yeah. So the diversification here is, you know, they get the hard assets. So majority of our clients do come and are sort of that profile, where they're coming from the major metros like New York, LA, San Francisco, Seattle, where the average home is well above the national average. And yeah, they're working professionals and, you know, they're typically investing in all those types of traditional securities. And they understand that real estate is sort of the wealth. And surprisingly, a handful of them are actually younger, on the younger side, don't even have a primary residence. And they're like, wow, but I have like 100,000, I want to invest, but I can't, that doesn't buy me a shed where I live. So might as well get into the market somewhere else. So that's kind of them diversifying as sort of getting into the market in real estate. And because, you know, there's potentials of higher earnings returns, with us as an asset management company, that because they own it directly And then in terms of how it helps them in their sort of W-2 world is, you know, real estate with the depreciation and all of that good economic pro rata rights, you know, we can kind of help you offset some of your personal income.
Yeah, I think that's one of the best parts about investing in real estate. I know I got a couple of K-1s this year, and you know, there might be depreciation recapture at some expense at some time, but at least for right now, you see your net income and then you see the depreciation. I really wish I could get that real estate professional, you know, tax status so I could, you know, wipe off all of that. I know that's one you can get heavily audited. It's very heavily audited by the IRS. So like, should I try to do it? I think I'm going to hold off on that because I know that's nice because it's like if you get a $25,000 loss, like right now I can only claim it down to zero. But then it'd be nice to be able to claim all of that. You know, it definitely has the benefits investing in real estate. But Andrew, I just want to say I've really enjoyed this conversation today. And for our audience that wants to learn a little bit more about you and your company, where should they go to?
Yeah, you know, go to our website, sharesfr.com. It's sharesfr.com as in single family rental. So sharesfr.com. You can create a free account, take a look at some of our sample properties. And if you're interested for us to initiate a custom search, you can book a call with someone on our team. And we're also on Instagram, all the social handles, sharesfr.com.
Perfect. I'll make sure to include that in the show into today's episode. And Andrew, thanks so much for coming on to the show today.
Oh, it was a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for tuning in to the REI Marketing Secrets podcast. Be sure to head on over to our website to check out the episode's full show notes. We'd love it if you would leave a review for us on iTunes. If you're interested in using podcast guesting to grow your real estate business, head over to podcastingyou.com. That's podcastingyou.com. We've helped over 400 real estate professionals secure more than 6,500 interviews. They're a podcasting booking agency that helps real estate investors appear on top-rated podcasts. Don't forget to subscribe to REI Marketing Secrets Podcast and join us every week as we bring you invaluable insights from the brightest minds in the real estate investment industry. Let's uncover the marketing secrets together.